I don't love that help you just gave us. Let's talk about the email we got again from our wonderful Norwegian listener, who I didn't mention. They are a Patreon subscriber, so there's that. But they laid some knowledge on us that I just laid on these guys about the Shackleton episode and where the reindeer sleeping bags may have come from, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, that was really brilliant. Yeah. Because, like, yeah, totally correct that, like,
I bet
reindeer
he's totally right.
are not an
southern
Antarctica thing.
Right.
I think all you got you don't even have polar bears in Antarctica. All you got are penguins and seals, right?
Yeah,
and
I think
killer whales. You got killer whales down there.
Fish of a couple of sorts, I'm
sure. Yeah,
that's
about it. But in terms of land-dwelling things...
Everything is smart enough to stay the fuck off of it, but us.
Am I wrong? I think the only... And they're not even totally land-dwelling, is penguins. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any four-footed...
Well, and seals go on land, too,
but they don't live there. But in terms of, like, there's nothing that full-time is a land animal.
No. Because if there was, Shackleton and the crew would have been eating them. And so it does make sense that these reindeer pelts didn't come from South America, like we suggested, although we were in a bit of a riff, that they did come with the boat from Norway, which means the pelts are more well-traveled than even Shackleton and the crew.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole South America thing is, like, always weird for me because, like, that whole, like, you go, you know, it's a very U.S.-centric or Northern Hemisphere view, but... You know, my view is you go south, it gets warmer. And so I have a hard time with this. And
to a point, until
south,
about the Panama Canal. And then...
And then it's starting to get colder. And that's really weird. Like, because, you know, what is
once
that?
Once the toilet water goes anti-clockwise, it gets colder again.
No, that's not really true.
If you're going from north to south, so our toilet water goes clockwise... Once you get across the equator, where it starts to go anticlockwise, then it gets colder if you continue going south. That is true.
I can guarantee you if you're like 1 degree south of the equator in Ecuador, it's warmer than here.
Keep going further south.
Agreed.
Yeah. You have
Once you get down to the 45th parallel south.
A fair amount south. And this is said like as somebody who, like, I actually went down there and drew a picture of the water. That was the... 5 minutes off the plane, I was in the airport drawing that picture.
You drew a picture?
Of the water.
Of the water going anti-clockwise, yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, I got to get back and check this out, because this
my luggage can wait. I need to make
it's
sure that
going
this
is, way.
This
it was
true.
All I care about. It was literally all I care
that
about.
That did my MRE shipment make
it. Well, yeah, I brought the MREs so I wouldn't have to eat the local food, yeah.
Okay, fuck it. I can get back on the plane and go home now. I've got everything I need.
So, yeah, I think that was a really prescient point of view that the reindeer probably came from Norway and came in because he mentioned again that they're still raising them for meat and pelts and shit there.
What do you think a reindeer weighs?
A reindeer is somewhere between 1,000, a deer.
1,500? No, I think you got an elk.
Somewhere between deer and an elk. It's
nah,
like in between.
I think
they're smaller than an
elk or bigger.
No, I've seen
you
reindeer.
Think they're smaller
I've seen
than
the reindeer, yeah.
Where? In your travels to Sweden?
No, some jack-off in Colorado used to keep them and bring them out every time.
Oh, that's
Christmas time for Santa
things. No, that's a stunted growth.
It's a real reindeer.
No.
Next to buffalo.
That's a reindeer
refugee.
Up to
400 pounds.
So significantly smaller than an elk, but bigger than a deer, because a deer is two and a half.
A reindeer is smaller than an elk?
Yeah, which is
that
smaller
is
than a moose.
So difficult for me to believe.
So we've got, what have we got?
I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Durainal moose? I'm trying to make a turducken out of this where we get to take a deer.
I'm
going to
check.
Stick
I'm
going to
check
PolitiFact.
Mostly untrue.
Snopes that shit.
Yeah. Snopes for when you really don't want to know the answer.
Well, according to the San Diego Zoo.
See, that's not a real place. I need a zoo.
It's one of the best zoos in the world.
I've been to the San Diego Zoo.
I've been
zoo.
There a number of times.
It's a fantastic zoo. I've spent
time with the same gorilla a number of times. He's been there so fucking long.
You spent time with him?
Yeah.
All
right. Well, like literally, there was a time I went and there was a small, it was many years ago because this isn't allowed anymore.
I just don't do zoos.
There was a small crack in the glass. And he was chewing on a stick, and I looked up, and I was hanging out with him. Very fascinated. I love primates that are not humans. And he sticks the stick through the glass. Obviously, a trick he'd learned. And I looked at it, and I took it, and I pretended to chew on it. And I stuck it back through the glass. And he took it, and he chewed on it. And then he stuck it back. And we did this for like a half hour. My mother has fucking photographs. There's photographic proof.
Of
pushing a stick back and forth through a crack in a window with a gorilla.
Okay, so I can't tell if you're trying to be the gorilla, to act like a gorilla, or act like Jane Goodall.
I'm just saying, take
the dick
story.
Were you trying to be Jane Goodall?
I was Jane Goodalling a little bit. Okay. Take the dick story out of the game.
Did
I put my kid in a cage? I didn't have a kid yet. I was a kid.
Did your mother put you in a cage?
She should have.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Mother used to say, if you got a kid, when they become a teenager, you put them in a barrel with a hole in it to feed them through. When they turn 18, you plug the hole. So that's what mother used to say. And from that little parable on.
Okay, well, you know.
That explains a lot.
The cool thing is, at this point, like, Shackleton has nothing on you but just suffering. You know, so that's kind of cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else listening, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly free and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a guy with a handful of money. John.
Get off my lawn!
And Rupert.
Probably not going to be here next week. I'll be broadcasting live from Ukraine. I want to go. I want to go.
I kind of want to go too.
All right, so let me put this out there.
Did I get your speakers?
No. Basically,
that means I probably end up with a cat.
if somebody there says, Rupert, we cover your bills for X months, 6 months, 2 months, 3 months, 8 months,
and hand you a gun and ammunition,
and we give you a plane ticket, you come here, I would do it in 3 seconds. If they said we cover your shit, so when you come back, you don't lose your if you come back.
Berg.
Would you take that job?
They call that a private military contractor.
You know.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
We know one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. I would black water this shit all day long. Not that I have any skills other than, you know.
So I'll ask again. Can I have your speakers?
No. That's the whole thing.
I would be tempted.
You're
to
not
go.
Coming back.
I would be tempted to go if it was in a press capacity because I like writing anyhow. But anyway, let's get through the shit.
I'm not going to go in any
Please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. It's free for you. It helps us with exposure and stuff.
Do they have reindeer in Ukraine?
To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints. Say hi, take guesses, we dig all that. Again, man, some of y'all kill it a little too quick. Like, I think today, less than a half hour.
Well, that's because of the giveaway picks.
I'm trying to make it harder. Anyway.
You should have just posted some Ukraine shit. Moose kills squirrel.
If you would like to get extra content and contribute towards the cost of the show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/ruinedheroes. And start getting extra stuff at just a buck a month. There are some upper tiers.
Fine, fair.
There are links in the show notes as well as on our website, ruinedheroes.com, where you can also find some older episodes. Thank you to those of you who do give. We appreciate it.
I think we actually need...
And contribute. We
need a legit secret Dakota ring that you got.
That means we have to make a legit secret code.
No, we don't.
I don't know what kind of time you have.
We just need a legit secret Dakota ring.
You can have the Dakota ring, and then sit around and be confused forever.
It doesn't actually have to decode
anything.
It's
like an Enigma machine just fucking around with the Windwalkers.
It just has to look like a cool secret Dakota ring. That's all it has to do.
You're the metal worker.
I know. I'm like,
come up with a way to make it affordable, and we can make it a Patreon tier.
Everybody, limited edition rate.
Hassle Rupert on the internet to get this done. Not on Twitter because he doesn't Twitter. Hit him on Facebook.
Yeah, if I hear enough response, I'll come up with secret decoder ring. Secret decodering broadcast make good.
Is going to cost you,
make,
though.
Make good. Is upper tier. Is upper tier.
Is going to cost you. No. For even more money, we will come up with the code for it.
No $5 million or ruble thing. You got to get over a buck.
One whole Bitcoin.
One whole Bitcoin. Holy crap. We'll come up with the code, too.
Well, right now, we're losing money in that deal. But still.
Which is we.
Well, any of us has money in it.
No, I'm not.
Crypto's in shit right now.
No, I'm not.
Actually, today's been okay, but it's been a hard boat the last couple of weeks.
That's your problem.
It's going to be great.
I'm just fine.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Unfortunately, it's down, and I'm not the position to buy more.
There is no stock market or any of that kind of shit that you ever invest in where it is great, and you get... No, you only get great when you invest in the shit, and it gets great. The only way it works.
Look, I play this new game. It's called $2. I look for whatever coin is out there that I can buy as many of them for $2 or less as I can. I got 50,000 coins in one
crazy game.
But I like it.
It's kind of cool.
All right, Krugerrands.
50,000 coins. It cost me $1.30.
All right.
It makes you feel good, you know?
And all you got to do is make it go up one penny. And now you've got $2.60.
I think we should just call
way more than that.
Should we just call you the Jaeger?
Should we just call you Dogecoin?
You didn't bring in the Jaeger?
No.
Oh fuck. Maybe we should just call you Dogecoin from now.
I refuse Dogecoin.
I'm Dodgy Google. You're Dogey John.
And he's already on a bathroom break.
Yeah.
So
are you seriously buying?
No, no, no. A intro. Let's not do. Let's just a intro.
Should we do? Yeah.
Let's just a intro. Okay. This the first one is the only one not said by the topic. It was said by Penny Wade, who is the chief of budget and personnel for King County Parks, Washington. Since you sometimes ask, who's that person?
Penny Wade.
And it was funny, and Penny Wade worked Penny really well, Wade. Right? Who's now Penny Wade is a budget officer. Put this all together.
Sounds like she was on the Jupiter 2.
So what Penny said is he never had to bring his lunch. He never had to do any of the normal duties like beach cleanup because all the girls would do it for him. There are stories.
Oh, God.
I started out pretty obscure.
And this is Washington.
This is Washington. North of us, not east of us, Washington.
Man.
It's okay. It's obscure.
All right.
The rest are all said by the topic. I've got four more if you need them all. Never trust anyone on an Italian movie. I know about these things. Stay away from special effects and explosives.
Oh, that guy, Sam Elliott?
No. I would really struggle with doing Sam because I know Sam. Like, it's hard because I couldn't say bad stuff. Probably couldn't find much bad stuff about somebody that has been so awesome every time I've met him.
But it's not Sam Elliott.
Yeah, it's not Sam
Elliott. Well, you could in the last week.
Why? Because he was on Marin?
Yeah, and he got roasted for his comments on Marin.
Well, maybe in your culture. My culture was well respected. Anyway.
What culture is that? Like the homophobic culture?
Anyway, I think...
Seriously, he got roasted for like...
Let's move forward. I think what the ultra-white right-wing conservatives did to the Republicans is really self-destructive. Absolutely stupid.
Hmm.
Again, quote by the topic. And... kind of a nice way to drag you out of the hole you were in.
Billy Crystal. Or
No, not quite.
Not Bill Crystal.
You were closer with Sam Elliott. You were closer with Sam Elliott. I've never thought of myself as a leading man, though I guess at one time I was considered one, being one of the young guys bopping around town with a television series. But I always
James
tried...
James Woods?
No, but you're close. But I always tried to be a character actor even then. Which still fits with James Woods, but you may need all five. All right, I got one more.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
No. You're definitely in the right area now.
Huh.
You're in the area. In fact, like Russell could have been in this write-up, but he wasn't. Because there's plenty. Last one I got. I never considered myself a cowboy because I wasn't. But I guess when I got into cowboy gear, I looked enough like one to convince people that I was. I do have one more, but it's unofficial. I just can't open it.
Is this somebody that's like kind of more of your generation than mine?
Nope.
Older. Okay.
It is. It spans your parents' generation all the way through my child's generation, if not longer.
Lauren Green?
Lauren Green hasn't made it that far, but you are definitely in the right place.
Yeah.
You were in the right place. Here's my last one that I just made up. The topic gives me the opportunity to talk about my feel-good movie.
Jeff Bridges.
No, that's not my feel-good movie. What's my feel-good movie?
Are we doing Clint Eastwood?
Yes, we are. What's my feel-good movie?
Paint Your Wagon.
Thank you very much. Come on, I thought it was a dead giveaway.
No, it was. I just never thought of Clint Eastwood as having anything to do with Washington.
We'll get there. And actually, in short order, because it comes up in the very beginning.
That's okay. I like Clint Eastwood.
Sources, clinteastwood.net/biography, imdb.com, notablebiographies.com, biography.com, and wideopencountry.com.
Yeehaw.
That was a curious fucking website, let me tell you. But it has some good information about some stuff I wanted to dig into. Mainly his relationships. Foreshadowing.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so...
Oh, yeah.
Just so you know, I hate Sandra Locke. She should have never appeared on film.
Oh, let's just... just wait.
Are you going to bring the hate on Sandra Locke?
No. So, born Clint Eastwood Jr., May 31st, 1930, in San Francisco, California, to parents Clinton Sr. and Margaret Ruth, is what she went by as Ruth, but Margaret Ruth Eastwood... he is the oldest of their two children. Due to the Depression, the family would move around a lot as the parents went from job to job trying to support the family, finally settling in Oakland. This led Clint to go to 8 separate elementary schools.
Well, at least they were keeping him at school.
Yeah. I mean, but I did something similar. I probably went to 8 elementary schools.
That's like...
there was one year I went to 3 different elementary schools.
That's literally every grade
you're
changing schools.
Or you do like I did, and one year you go to 3. And it just... your numbers go up real fast.
Okay, little orphan Annie.
Again, I got nothing on my struggle, yo.
Just got to make it about you, don't you?
But,
yeah, I know.
I thought it was about Clint Eastwood.
I thought it was comparative, for fuck's sake.
No, you don't compare to Clint Eastwood.
You're right, I don't. I am totally Lee Marvin.
You just Facebook replied to your own post.
You made me stop and question whether I had actually done that, because I have. So, anyway, he wasn't a bad student, but was generally not interested in much beyond music and mechanics. This, coupled with all the moving around, caused Eastwood to have to repeat a grade, but he did eventually graduate and attended Oakland Technical School, which was kind of high school. That was back when they had technical school as part of high school. He swam competitively well in school and was... in one play. He has noted that being in that play was an absolutely fucking horrible experience and almost prevented him from doing what we know him as doing. I didn't dig into what it was, but he apparently really hated that experience. After graduation, he had a few small jobs for his family before his family moved to Washington in 1949, where he had a few more menial jobs before getting drafted in 1950. It is said that he even worked for a timber company here in Springfield for a little bit during this time.
Wow.
I know, right? I did not expect that.
that's kind of fun, you know, because I live...
that's getting real close to home. Both y'all's live
me and John live in Springfield, yeah. So yeah, that's kind of weird.
Real close to home. In 1951, while in the Army, he was on a two-seater plane returning from a reported tryst in Seattle when the plane ran out of fuel and had to crash land in the ocean. He and the pilot used a life raft to travel over 2 miles to the shore.
Wait, he's returning from Seattle to...
California, where he's stationed.
Well, you fly over the ocean.
Monterey Bay, but that's in the next paragraph.
Why would you be flying over the ocean?
Because you were running out of fuel and they wanted to crash.
They're just from Seattle down. I don't know.
You're over land there.
I'm not.
There's no, like, vast ocean.
I've never been alive in 1950. And I've never. Well, no, I guess I have flown an airplane. I've never been on a tryst on a weekend in Seattle. I don't know, man.
First of all, I'm not sure you know what the meaning of the word tryst is. So
No. Like, literally, they got some leave to go up to Seattle and fuck some chicks that they met. I know what tryst means.
Okay.
I even know how to spell it. Okay. It barely has a vowel in it.
Yeah, it's one of those Polish words.
Yeah. Barely has a vowel in it.
It's one of those. Wait, isn't Y one of those sometimes?
Why is it sometimes
I O U
and sometimes Y
and so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. By, B-Y.
Yeah.
By.
Yeah. Right.
The Polish excuse.
My
rhythm. Anyway, just interesting. Like, fucking crash landed in the plane. He's like 20. He swam to shore 2 miles.
Raft to shore.
That is
not swimming to shore.
But actually, the write-up I saw said that they used a raft to swim 2 miles to shore, which maybe they didn't have paddles, and so they were implying that they used their hands or something. I don't know. Either way, fuck it. They got to shore 2 miles.
They had a fucking raft.
I probably wouldn't be able to do it, so whatever.
So you're saying it's like end credits on Jaws? Like
yes. That. Yes.
I mean, really, you know, if you crash in a plane and somehow there's a raft available, that's pretty cool. And then 2 miles.
A two-seater plane at that.
Yeah.
Like, this is not like 727 where there's a slide and an inflatable water park that comes out.
A two-seater plane with a raft.
An inflatable raft.
Yeah, right.
An inflatable emergency raft. And I can see a small little.
I can see it, yeah. Two-man
raft. It's 2 miles offshore.
Right.
It's,
and those motherfuckers made it back from Alcatraz.
Like, it's like moderately impressive. I mean, it's
something. Again, it's something I probably wouldn't be able to do.
I don't know. 2 miles, so you can see
the shore. They were a different type of man back then.
They were.
You can see the shore at 2 miles. It's like.
Only if my glasses survived the crash. So I didn't find any record of him seeing battle, possibly because he reportedly wooed the daughter of an officer to get out of deployment. Reportedly. But he was.
Yeah, because wooing the daughter of an officer
worked out great for Maverick.
Yeah. Yeah, that usually results in, like, hey, so this guy's trying to fuck my daughter. Let's keep him here near my daughter.
Well, the way it was said is, like, the dude actually liked him. And because, of, you know, he was a likable guy. He had personality. He was a handsome man. He was tall and strong and all that shit. And he kind of liked her, like, this is going to protect my daughter. He can paddle two miles.
Right.
And it's
like, I'm going to keep him close so I can shoot him if I want to.
That's a possibility, too. But the story is that, yeah, like, dude actually may have kept him out of battle.
No, the bottom line is, like, getting drafted in 1950 was not a good year.
Yeah, that was Korea.
That was a bad year to get drafted there.
It was Korea. It was no good.
Korea. Get sent the fuck over there.
So he was stationed at Fort Ord on Monterey Bay in California, which is now abandoned. And a Facebook hint. The whole fort is totally just fucking abandoned buildings. And I don't know what the government... never mind. No, but the government, what they do with our money.
Well, because only the U.S. government can abandon
army bases
in very fancy-ass areas.
Yes.
Only the U.S. government can do that. And then keep them hanging around abandoned.
And they're sitting on, I mean, like, it's an army base. It's probably trillions of dollars worth of property. Enough about what our government does or does not do.
Do you have any kind of idea of the kind of surf potential you have there?
Yes. It's within walking distance from the water.
I mean, if I say it's safe to surf this beach.
So instead of going to Korea, he hung out in Monterey Bay, where he was a swimming instructor and projectionist for training films. That's where he didn't have to do anything really, kind of.
Not exactly Eastern Front material.
No,
no, not exactly.
His service ended in 1953, and he headed to Los Angeles, where he attended L.A. City College as a business major for a couple of terms. He supported himself by digging swimming pools, which would be a theme for a little while.
Okay, that's the roughest duty so far.
That is the hardest job. Yeah,
that's pretty rough duty.
That is breaking rock under the hot sun. Yeah. It's literally. So he gets points for that, but it's also kind of Encino Man.
Yeah.
But his army friends had talked him into trying to start acting. He also, in 1953, met and married his first wife, Margaret Johnson. The couple would have two kids together, but before they were married, Eastwood had a child with another woman who still has not been named publicly. The daughter would be adopted, that's public record, and rumors that the young lady had been a member of one of his acting troops would circle. Continued infidelity would eventually become the reason for their separation, but they would remain married until 1984. Legally married.
Whoa. Oh.
Legally married.
Wait.
Not married, married.
But starting...
1953. So that's like 31 years.
29.
53 to 84?
54 to 83.
No, 53 to 84.
Whatever, 30 years. Like, that's like a long time to like leave a flag hanging out there. That's like crazy.
Yeah.
That's like nuts. You got this chick out there that can like call you into court at any time and like soak you.
Right. And he's already had a child through infidelity.
Well, staying married to her means that he doesn't have to go into court and she take half, Eddie, half.
Foreshadowing.
Well, all you're doing is
half, Eddie, half.
All you're doing is hanging around waiting for the divorce laws in California to get even worse. But I guess he didn't know that going in.
Right. You know, like you know,
maybe I'll get lucky and get my ass dead over on these spaghetti westerns I'm about to make.
Yeah, or he's looking at it like my mortgage. Like, shit's only going to fall down and get better for me.
I was in L.A. once. I gave a girl a lollipop. It cost me $10,000. It's like crazy.
This is not a story for right now.
That was a hooker, and it wasn't a lollipop.
I'm just telling you. Like, the California divorce laws, like, don't get divorced there. It's a very bad idea. Leave the country.
So he ended up doing a screen test for Universal Studios in 1955 and scored a job as a contract player, which essentially means you just show up in bit parts here and there, uncredited, earning $75 a week, doing bit parts in their productions such as Revenge of the Creature and Tarantula, both in 1955. So I got to say two favorite things in one podcast. This job only lasted...
Is that the one with the giant tarantula?
Yes.
That's a great movie.
It's a Brockett Pelma Boamy, just so you know.
See, I love that movie because, like, they go into the tarantula cave and there's the big giant tarantula. Yep. And the spider web is clearly made out of, like, you know, standard hemp rope.
Yeah, like macrame.
It looks like a plant hanger. Yeah, it's like the funniest thing ever. You're just like, wow. But like that movie scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid. The Tarantula, that was a crazy ass movie. That scared the crap out of me.
Again, Brockett Pelma, Boamy, and they get about this big.
So not anyway, in that movie.
Yeah, they get about this house size big.
So that's back in the days when they were... What really scared you was shit that was like, here's a spider. I'm going to make it really fucking big. Mm-hmm. You don't need to make a demon.
No.
You know, you don't need to make an alien come out of the sky. No, all you got to do is take a damn spider and then to scare a kid, you make it really fucking big.
And one of the things I really missed is if you made a human-sized chicken, they would eat us. Like, if that happened in reality...
Yeah. But see, like, the thing of it was like, you know, in the tarantula movie, it was like the entire plot relied on people going into a cave, seeing a spider web that only a giant radioactive spider could make.
Who could plate.
And saying, let's investigate further.
Right.
And it's like, I would never do that.
No. It would
if
be.
If I go into a cave and see a big, huge, giant spider web, I'm just like, let's go on the California beach and get a surfboard.
I get into conversations with you where I look at the thing that I'm coming up on and go, no, I'm leaving.
Just leave.
And that's just a conversation. Yeah. I could probably survive.
Yeah.
I want to call the army. Have them come down with some people with flamethrowers.
Right.
And I will watch from a safe distance, like Belgium.
No, no, just leave.
Yeah.
Like, just looks go like a away. Big spider.
Leave Let's it alone.
Find something else to do.
Yep. Yeah. Let's follow Shackleton's route.
So, as much as we've drawn on about this movie, it was not high quality. Like, if you've seen it, you know.
Macrame spider web.
Huge.
It's like a well known movie.
It's,
yeah.
It's up
especially
there,
for a B.
It's a slight tip down from The Blob. But it's in that realm.
It is kind of America's Gojira movies.
Yeah.
And I mean,
The Blob had like sort of vaguely more of a plot, and it had Steve McQueen, who was vaguely better looking than Eastwood, but just only vaguely.
Very discussion
I
point.
I never
Very
really understood
point.
It because McQueen was obviously shorter than Eastwood. But like The Blob is the slightly more, and then the tarantula and the thing and all of those, those 50s
Chud
movies.
Came out, not in what, 60s?
No, Chud was late 70s.
Chud was fucking scary.
Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
So fucking scary. It was one of those movies I still have not rewatched because I was so fucking scared the first time.
You know, when I saw that movie,
Serious Hills Have
not watch it again.
When I saw that movie, that was just like a documentary for me. You know, it's like, because I lived in New York at the time.
Right.
I was like, yes, there are people who live underground who will eat you.
Everybody knows this. They're down there with the alligators
Everybody
right now.
Everybody knows this. Like, these people will eat you.
So,
what the fuck else are they doing down there?
Be all this as it may, the job just doing the little bit part things only lasted for about a year and a half because in 1956, Universal dropped him. Odd note. On the exact same day that they dropped Burt Reynolds from a stunt job for pushing a producer into a water tank during a dispute. So he and Reynolds were fired on the same day, which is curious.
Nice. That's a good, like, afternoon drinking bit.
Right?
I'm liking that.
If you're going to fire somebody or get fired for pushing your boss into a tub of water, I think that that's probably pretty good.
Well, this seems a lot like the Jeremy Clarkson punching the producer at BBC that got him canned. You know, it does feel like that kind of a situation where they were having a very big dispute. He's like, no, fuck
it was
off.
Over catering. Come on.
It could have been. Well,
it was.
Reynolds.
Clarkson talked
Reynolds
about it.
Reynolds was a. Well, that one was over catering.
Oh,
but Reynolds was a stunt dude, so yeah. I don't think catering was an issue. I think it was just your fuckhead.
Yeah. Man. I'm not going in there. Watch. It's going to hurt. Boom.
So, yeah, it ended up being a good thing that he not technically quit digging pools because that is what he went back to full time while still trying for roles, occasionally getting one. He was thrilled to be allowed to be the bully to James Garner on an episode of Maverick, as well as acting opposite Carol Channing in The First Traveling Sales Lady, which was a total fucking flop, and a few other small roles. But like getting out of that contract gave him some place to do some other stuff, including dig more pools.
Carol Channing.
Mm-hmm. She was almost a Facebook hint. About to give up on acting, Eastwood was meeting with a friend at CBS, and as he was walking down the hall, an executive saw him and asked if he was an actor. Turns out, the person was involved in casting a new series, and Eastwood got his first big role in Rawhide as Rowdy Yates. Originally a supporting role, Eastwood stood out, and by the end of the seven-season run, Yates had become a central character, and Eastwood was a household star. Everybody knew who he was. Out of nowhere.
Well, it's a huge cultural shift.
It was.
You know. Cause like
Not yet. It was a huge cultural shift, but your angle, I don't know yet.
Well, I think when you had, like, you know, Rawhide and all that, I think that's when, like, the gay leather bar got invented.
Not at all what I expected.
There's where the love of assless chaps came.
Oh, right. It's been a while since I said that. Still fucking triggers me.
No, but seriously, like the Leatherman cowboy gay icon thing, I think comes to a fore.
It's
genesis in this moment with like these kinds of things, you know. It's just like, you know, men.
That's gonna make for some easy access right there. Yeah, I like them chaps.
we're just driving some cattle. All of us men's.
So, another interesting note about...
Go ahead, ride for glory!
Get them up, move along, we're all hide. I mean, if Rowdy Yates isn't a gay stage name, I don't know what is.
Is there a porn star? John, would you do a quick Google foo? There's got to be a Rowdy Yates porn star,
right? I don't want that kind of shit popping up on mine.
Oh, dude, seriously, suffer for the cause. We got to know. There's got to be a Rowdy Yates porn star. Because it is super porn star namey.
Not straight porn.
No, probably not.
No.
They're a specialized actor.
There are outfits and slings.
No.
All right. Porn stars who listen to this show, get the fuck on it. Because somebody, potential porn stars who listen, you youngins who are about to turn 21.
Falling down whatever. My job.
Yeah, there's no money in it anymore, by the way. Because porn's free.
I'm a starving porn star. I'm a starving actor. What do you do, porn?
No, dude, seriously, I know of somebody who is a porn star / comedian / writer. Like, and even that may not
be. Oh, you mean bartender?
But she doesn't seem to be. Anyway, an interesting note about Clint Eastwood being in so many westerns is that he was quite allergic to horses and most other animal dander. If you watch the films, he is rarely... If you watch any of his cowboy films, he is rarely in a shot with a horse. Like, they'll shoot the horse, and they'll shoot him. They're very rarely put together. It is said that he would have to take medication just to do a scene with a horse. And some said that it was like a nasal medication. So, like, he had to snort some shit just to be near one.
Yeah, it's called cocaine.
Well, that's how allergies...
I didn't want to suggest so much. But yeah, like, he's super fucking allergic to horses. In 1959, Eastwood would enter a relationship with Roxanne Tunis. John, hold this end of the table down.
Roxanne Tunis?
Uh-huh.
You know what? All right, so for all you babes out there...
It gets better.
If your name is Roxanne Tunis, I want to see your underwear drawer, because I know it's very exciting. Roxanne Tunis has no legit underwear.
Roxanne Tunis was a stunt woman on the set of Rawhide.
Oh, my
John,
God.
John, hold the table down. I don't know that...
What does Miss Wonderful have to say?
As long as you're comfortable, dear, no one will care what you wear. Family.
You press that twice, I think, but I think
apropos,
it works.
Yeah, I'm
that's
good.
That's a stunt.
Yeah, I'm good.
So they would have Eastwood's fourth child together, because remember, he had one illegitimately while dating his soon-to-be wife, and they had two together. And so now he has... This is another one of those where there has to be a count involved. We're up to child four, but they would part ways in 1973. But remember, he's still married to the first woman's, right?
Woman's,
sure. Most of his parts during this time were similar. An upstanding young man, but roles Eastwood considered boring. And when Rawhide was on hiatus in 1964, he took a lead role in a Spanish-filmed spaghetti western. So Italian-made, but filmed in Spain.
By Leone.
Yeah. Pay was shitty, as were the accolades from this genre, because it was not respected. But when Fistful of Dollars came out, Eastwood got to display a different side of acting. Since he played a grizzled and morally ambiguous character, something he would come to portray frequently from here on out, but prior to this, he'd always been kind of like the
goody-goody.
Yeah, exactly. He followed up in two more Sergio Leone movies to make a trilogy, in quotes, trilogy, I don't know, it's totally a trilogy, but of Fistful of Dollars, Few More Dollars, and The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, which, if you, like, that's been remade.
What? A Fistful of Dollars for a Few Dollars More, and The Good,
and
the
Good,
Bad,
and the Ugly. They call that a trilogy.
What's been remade?
The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
They remade that?
Yeah, like a decade ago. And it's not bad. I got a copy on DVD. You want to borrow it?
No! No!
It's got some good actors. The cast is good. The movie's kind of mediocre.
No, what? It has, like, George Clooney in it or something. Something horrible.
No, I said the cast was good, you fucking idiot.
Like, I don't even want to know who would be in the remake of The Good, the Bad, the... Just, no.
Okay, so either way.
Wrong. Let's remake the first Alien movie.
It also had a little more feminist bend, the new one. So, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly was released in 1966, so 64, 65, 66, they're released in Italy and Spain. However, originally shown in Italy with someone else voicing over Clint Eastwood's voice, he ended up re-recording the words for the movie for the American release, which they released from 67 to 68 in America, and made Eastwood even more popular than ever, so even more popular than Rawhide had made him. So he's moving up, right? And by doing voiceover for his own acting, which is kind of, I want to do that once. That's fucking hilarious. I guess that's technically what we're doing. We're voiceover right now.
What? No, we're not.
Yeah, we are. If somebody makes a cartoon, somebody drop an animated cartoon, we're voiceover right now.
Like three bald guys?
No, there are people that will
easy to
draw cartoons of popular podcasts, which means not us. But it happens. We could voiceover.
I want to have the Lego.
You and I technically did voiceover once.
The Legomation of our podcast.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh, I like that.
Oh, yeah, I do like that. So this rising fame almost landed him the part of Two-Face in the original Batman series.
No.
But the show was canceled before Eastwood got to play the villain. It was like the last season they were going to do a Two-Face episode and they decided not to.
Wait, what are you talking about? Like the 1960s Batman
series? Yeah. With Adam West, yeah.
Wait, campy Batman?
So I could be just totally missing something here. It's like I remember like the Penguin, the Joker, the Riddler, Mr. Freeze, mm-hmm. King Tut. I do not remember a Two-Face in the OG
That's
Batman
That's because
series.
You didn't listen to the last half of the sentence. After the comma,
they just totally
said,
caught it.
But the show was canceled before Eastwood got to play the role.
Yeah, okay.
Like it had finished. It ran for what, like 4 years or something like that?
And everything there was so campy that it might not have actually done him any good to play it. Because he went on to do all of
that may have been a good
dodge, actually.
Yeah, I think so. Because, like, the only guy who, like, out of that series of, you know, Burgess Meredith went on to do The Trainer in Rocky. Mm-hmm. I can't really name too many. I'm sure he did other parts.
Did Eartha Kitt as Catwoman?
Yeah.
Eartha Kitt did some stuff, but how much money
was
she
really
making?
What's the guy with
really
the mustache that he wouldn't shave?
Well, the thing was
the Joker guy. No, the guy who played Joker.
Cesar Romero?
Thank you.
Name another movie he did. I mean, he did a lot of movies.
He was very famous,
but he worked very steadily. But like,
I think it may have been more vaudevillian, though.
The only guy who ever like really went on to make a bunch of things was like Vincent Price in the Hammer Horror films. Mm-hmm. And Vincent Price was like minor in the OG Batman series because he was Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, but he voices the intro to Thriller.
He was in a few things. But like
the intro to Thriller.
That's not a movie.
I don't think he did the intro to Thriller.
Yes, he did.
The voice?
Yep. Yeah. Yes, he did.
With the
he was in Edward Scissorhands. Yes, he was. So anyway.
No, but he did. Like, his big thing came with, like, the Hammer Horror films, like, you know, Theater of Blood and stuff like that. And the Telltale Heart, all the Edgar Allan Poe.
Here's a thing I probably should have thrown in earlier, but my editing got a little weird. During the filming of Fistful of Dollars all the way through Good, Bad, and the Ugly, apparently he wore the same serape in all three movies and didn't wash it once. So I'm sure he was really charming to smell.
Good idea. I mean, because like that...
It does...
That really worked the way...
The piece correctly.
Yeah, like his wardrobe in those movies was like... First of all, it was very unique. The modified superlative. But, it was unique because he was in this like weird...
That's very special of you.
Shitty looking poncho and stuff. Yep. You know, and it was like
and
a...
He got beat up more along the way.
It was a real departure that he was like in these shitty clothes.
But I think it lends to the character when they can do that kind of thing.
It looked very authentic.
Yeah.
It looked
authentic. You know, which is one of the big complaints about a lot of the Batman movies, not to get back to Batman, but like that everything's brand new all the time. It's
right.
Like there's no wear in any of it.
Yeah, there was no wear. And we didn't really rediscover where until, like, you know, sci-fi movies, like with Star Wars, where they're getting into
where there's, like, yeah, blast there's marks on their
chips
fucking armor
on the helmets and,
shit. And
yeah. stuff like that. You know,
yeah,
so
Boba Fett's got a dent in his helmet.
The AT-AT's got a fucking hole in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was cool that they did that. Because, like, previous to that, sci-fi, every single thing was always brand new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the spray paint was always...
Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
But you had to, like, use the spray paint to hold the cardboard together.
Yeah.
So, riding on the success of the spaghetti westerns, Eastwood returned to the States and opened his own production company, Mal Paso, which literally translates to bad move, after his agent told him it would be a bad move to take the role in the Leon movies. So, like, agent says, don't get in the Leon movies. He makes a grip of money from the Leon movies. He starts his own fucking production company called Bad Move.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking clever and good move, in my eyes. Production company still exists, unlike a lot of these that we discussed. They disappear. And he placed himself back in westerns with Hang 'Em High in 1968. He was also busy with parts from other production companies, and in 1969, started one of the few movies you will get to hear him sing in, the musical Paint Your Wagon, opposite Lee Marvin, who is a Facebook hint.
Okay.
Everybody's leaving. No, it's true. I don't carry on about Paint Your Wagon at all. Because the next sentence is, Eastwood started incorporating humor in some of his roles, another theme that we would see in his growing career. Alas, that was not the only branching out he would do. In 1971, he would direct his first movie, an erotic thriller, Play Misty for Me. He would also transition from cowboy to cop with his role as Dirty Harry in 1971. Big moves.
Who co-starred with him in Play Misty for Me?
Not doing this with you. Go ahead. You hater.
Sandra Locke.
I know. So in 19-
so is he dating Sandra Locke at this point? I think he is.
Rumor has it that they started dating during the filming. I get into his relationship with Sandra Locke soon, but we got some stuff to cover.
Even though it is readily apparent to anybody that this woman has very moderate acting skills and is bit player. I mean she can act.
So I think
but
she
was. Not Not in
the
in,
I
to
think
the
that
extent
the casting
cast her
the
in.
Casting person cast her and he didn't know her. Somebody but while working together, they met each other. I think this, like, near as I could read it, this is the beginning
Wait. So what was this movie, Paint Your Wagon, came before Play Misty?
Yeah. Paint Your Wagon was 68, 69. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the weird thing. Is
Misty,
like,
was 70, yeah.
I mean, do you know what Play Misty for Me is?
I watched it in a film class in college and don't remember much of it.
But it's somebody, you know, and I'm going off of very, very, very sketchy memory here. But Play Misty for Me, I think, is like somebody is an FM radio DJ and Sandra Locke
and
is hung up on him.
Song. Yeah.
And requesting. Uh-huh. So it's a real departure from the
and it's an erotic
Western
thriller,
thing.
Right.
Yeah. I think that, like, Edward Boghossian did something like it later on with talk radio or something like that, where, like, every now and then this late night radio DJ,
the scream you hear ain't be your
thing
own.
Comes in. Yeah, and they brought it in to a little extent with, like, American Graffiti, where Wolfman Jack was like this, like, sort of, you know.
We should cover Wolfman.
No, we shouldn't.
Yeah, we should.
No, we shouldn't.
Yeah, that double means we should. So obviously a lot of divergence. He's not just a cowboy anymore. He's done the directing thing and starred in Play Misty for Me, which was an erotic thriller.
But wasn't Play with Misty for Me his baby? Like,
yeah, that was his first film. Like, he really wanted to make that fucking movie.
Yeah, that was like his thing.
That's why he started the production company, so that he could make the movie the way he wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad idea.
It was a successful movie,
just,
I think.
Of the company. It was a very successful movie.
You know, it was successful. It was just sort of like weird.
Well, and again, and then doing Dirty Harry, transitioning to a cop role, and that grizzled cop role, which apparently he was like 20 years younger than the character he played. But whatever. So in 1972, while filming Where Eagles Dare, Eastwood found a crazy love.
Just, like, glossed over Dirty Harry. All right.
But we get back to it a little bit.
Okay.
In 1972, while filming Where Eagles Dare, Eastwood found a crazy love for the British pub, because it was filmed in Britain. So much so that he opened one of his own, the Hog's Breath Inn in California. One of the co-owners commented, and I didn't write their name down, but this is a quote, "I had to terminate three pretty good waitresses in the first few months of operation. Not because they went to bed with Clint Eastwood, but because they either talked about it all over the premises or came in the next day acting like they owned the place." End quote. The location closed in 1999, but would be reopened under new management later. And apparently still exists. But
the Hog's Breath.
Inspired. Wow.
It was a British pub. It wasn't supposed to be as fun. And it was like fucking in Monterey, I think.
All you need to do is serve a bunch of beer and some sausages.
Oh, no. Maybe it's in Carmel. Maybe he's moved to Carmel by the sea now.
It doesn't really matter. Essentially, what you're saying is Taco Bell, authentic Mexican food.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
Honestly,
there.
I think this is more like the Irish pub that we go to, that it is kind of an authentic English kind of pub style pub.
Yeah. It is our take on it.
Yeah.
It is somebody's take on it.
I just think it's hilarious that his philandering caused him to lose three waitresses in the first handful of months.
Well, that's never happened with a restaurant before.
Never.
He's just keeping up with the times. I mean, fuck, it's not like he's not used to sticking his dick in everything.
Everything that moves and is like under 5'6".
Two legs, a hole, and a heartbeat. Sometimes the pulse is optional.
Yeah, I didn't write this down, but he's reportedly never been with a person under or over 5'6". And he has terms for the ladies, like the small thing or the little lady or one of my favorites, the back pocket.
Yeah, she's so small.
He calls this girl's back pockets.
Yeah, you're so small.
It's the gayest thing I've ever heard.
You're so small, I can put you in my back pocket.
I didn't write it down. I just remembered it, and it's fucking great.
That is so leather bar. Like, hey, bud, you want to be in my back pocket? What the fuck? What does that mean, sir?
That is kind of like flagging.
Bend over and ride for glory. Like
flagging, isn't it?
It means you're my back pocket. Yeah, you're my back pocket.
I wear this purple Band-Aid or bandana for you.
Yeah.
I forgot what purple means. Sorry. Anyway, over the next decade, Eastwood would continue to branch out and move to strictly comedic roles for a little while in movies like Every Which Way But Loose in 1978, where his co-star was an actual orangutan. I tried to find it, and I would have had to pay for it, so I didn't watch it, but I do want to watch that again. He also kept to more dramatic parts, such as portraying the real-life convict Frank Lee Morris in Escape from Alcatraz.
Well, Every Which Way But Loose was, like, really weird because it seemed like Eastwood was taking up the Burt Reynolds mantle a little bit.
It was a Smokey and the Bandit kind of thing, yeah.
He was doing that.
Unfortunately, a large part of the comedic intent of Every Which Way But, which worked very well with the orangutan, a large part of Every Which Way But Loose that fell by the wayside and was filler material, sort of like Four Sticks on Zeppelin 4, was the appearance of who? Sandra Locke! There she is! And he's still trying to hit that, and it's just like she has no place in the movie. I don't know why she's in
there.
You're
so fucking fixated.
Yes! And it's not that I really think she's the world's worst actor or that she's, like, hideously ugly or anything. It's just, like, why is she constantly reappearing when she is the absolute apex of mediocrity? I will never understand it.
Because Eastwood is there now. You know? And he just keeps his
she's
pockets.
Doing whatever she can to get a goddamn paycheck.
Yeah, he keeps his pockets on a dick leash, and they just follow along.
He could do so much better than her. I mean, it's just like there's
he was doing really so much better than her. He was doing everything.
I know. So, like, why is she constantly reappearing when she's so like
this? Because he's into it.
Okay, you know how a lot of them, they'll sit there and say, okay, I need to have this type of catering. I need to this. Okay, I need to have Sandra Locke here for my blowjob.
This is going to be a long one. Sorry, folks. He was in Escape from Alcatraz playing Frank Lee Morris, the guy who actually did one of the three guys. He had become a staple in U.S. cinema, and it was clear that he was going here to stay. But his progress as a director was what may become the next focus of the viewing public. Eastwood would also end up with another questionable in another questionable relationship, this time with actor
Sandra Locke?
Yes. whom he had started to fling with in 1975 during the filming of the Outlaw of Josie Wales. So that's when they met, because they were both in Outlaw Josie Wales. She was married to a gay sculptor named... Oh, dude, you're going to love this. Named Gordon Anderson, who would somehow convince herself that she had tamed the philandering Eastwood and made him monogamous. This was not true, and the relationship ended 10 years later. So they were together for 10 years, with Eastwood reportedly having changed the locks on their home and leaving her things packed on the front porch.
So Locke got locked out.
Yes. God, well done.
Nice, John. Nice.
She filed a palimony suit, and after years was awarded...
One of the most infamous palimony suits ever. Was awarded
an undisclosed amount.
One of the... her and actually, Lee Marvin was, I think, the very first palimony suit in California.
He's had a few.
So interesting that, like, the Lee Marvin tie-in. But
Locke would later publish a book called The Good, the Bad, and the Very Ugly that told the story of their turbulent relationship.
Yeah, classy move.
Now,
classy. Remember, and she's never been in a movie since.
Remember, I haven't mentioned fuck all about her divorce from the gay dude. She wasn't divorced. She was married during the whole time.
Yeah, I know.
So she was. She just needed to keep her muse in back pockets.
Oh my God! How are you going to be married and convince yourself that this philanderer is going to quit fucking around when you? Got a gay husband.
I actually
the logic is defeatist.
I sort of get it because I've actually oddly been
been right there.
I've been in this situation.
All right, Clint.
Where you have a woman who is married to a gay man and they know it and they're willing to do anything to sort of spackle over that abscess, you know? You know, they're just like, but I did everything for you. And it's like, yes, that's very true. You did some very demeaning and degrading things. But, you know, there's only so far I can go with this because, like, basically you're trying to rectify your previous situations through me, and I can't do it. And that's
you
what
turned a man gay.
That's what was going on.
No, I think he was gay long before. I think it was a marriage of convenience.
Yeah, but you're trying to like excise your gay marriage through me,
right?
And you're just not that hot. You're just not.
I don't know. He's fucking everything that moves in California right now.
No, he is. He is.
She may not be.
I would fuck Clint Eastwood before Sandra Locke.
We've already established that you have no love for her.
He's better looking than she is. She's no great shakes of the lamb's tail. I mean, come on. Can we agree with that? Like, she's nothing special. I mean,
not with his dick and you pushing.
Perfectly. She's Casey Anthony hot. I might give it a whirl.
I would have fucked Tyne Daly. You know? just for the accent.
Okay, we're calling you Clint Eastwood now.
Yes, we are. So the next unexpected move was to become mayor of Carmel by the Sea in California. And that is actually the name of the town, if y'all don't know.
I always love the by the sea.
It's aspect. So fucking it's ridiculous. So it is so hoity-toity. And
no, it's not. Like, anytime it's like by the sea, that means like a lot of soft ice cream places there. Like, Joe Biden would love
which
this
is
place.
What people who can't eat real food eat.
Yeah.
And hence the really blue blood rich people.
Soft
hands should know.
Yeah, you've got like a lot of soft ice cream there, like 20 zillion signs that say real saltwater taffy.
Yeah, now it's a vegan joint and
a Pilates studio.
Frozen yogurts. Pilates studio. Good call again. John with the fucking laydowns.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
hot yoga.
That guy. Burkham. What the fuck? That documentary I gotta watch because it looks like a really fun story. Anyhow, he becomes mayor of Carmel by the Sea in California in 1986 by only accepting a salary of $300 for the entire term. More fucking politicians should do that. Just saying.
No, I remember when he ran for this, it was like a big, huge thing. It was like, whoa, Clint Eastwood, because like that was the first time when like he came out and did that mayoral run. It was a little bit Sonny Bono.
Well, it's 86. Reagan's a president.
It was a little bit Sonny.
Anything's possible.
Sorry. It was a little bit Sonny Bono, where like you had the first inklings of a few Hollywood actors or Hollywood people that came out and said, like, yeah, I'm not a crazy commie lib. And he was along there with Sonny Bono with that.
He's definitely like, Republican side.
Yeah. And that was like a huge break. That was, you know. That was like somebody in the Kremlin coming out and saying, I think you should be able to
it's
open your
business. It's still divergent.
Yeah, it's you still know, like a huge
like
thing.
When you find out The Undertaker is a fucking Republican.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know, anybody in
a... What's the jackoff that was a libertarian that went to South America for a handful of years and finally came back? Well, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay, sure.
Was like governor for...
No, you're thinking of the guy from Minnesota.
Yeah. He was governor somewhere for a while.
The governor of Minnesota.
Yeah.
That guy, Jesse Ben Ventura.
Thank you. Yeah, the body Ventura.
Jesse
the
body,
it was a fucking, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But that's not the same thing. Like,
I don't think it's too far.
No, there was, like, the idea that there could be anybody who was not a flaming liberal in Hollywood was, like, insane. Nobody could comprehend it. It was like,
yeah, people are more than just what they portray.
Yeah.
So Eastwood says he did it because he was opposed to some of the zoning laws that were being passed.
Like Sonny Bono.
And while yes. And while in office, he did change every single one of them. That's kind of all he did.
Good.
Which is exactly the kind of politician Rupert loves.
Yeah,
the hero
that
we need. He did not seek re-election at all, and even though he has been pushed by some to get back into politics, he's stayed away so far, with one exception. He was sworn in as Parks Commissioner of California in 2002. Legend has it that when he got his badge at the ceremony, he held it up and said to the audience, "You are all under arrest."
Well, that's not...
With a Parks match. I love it.
I mean, that's...
That's some... Good fucking humor right there.
That's not true.
Why?
Well, he essentially gave the keynote speech at the Republican convention
he
when it was Obama's second term.
He did
and
that,
and he
yes.
gave the speech to the empty chair.
And in the effort to avoid making this too political, I avoided some of that, yes. But yes, he did. He's appeared at more than one national Republican convention.
Well, I think you need to rethink that.
No, I don't. So, while he was serving as mayor and in a committed relationship with Locke, Eastwood, and still married, technically, to his first wife, Eastwood started up an ongoing relationship with a flight attendant, Jacqueline, J-A-C-E-L-Y-N. I don't know how she wants to say it.
Anyway, it's spelled sexy.
Her last name is Reeves, so Jocelyn Reeves, which produced two more kids. So now we're up to six kids.
I can guarantee you she's hotter than Sandra Locke.
Probably.
A flight attendant?
Yes, she
Jesus
was.
Christ, you can have a fucking hairy wart on your face and you're more attractive.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Altitude. Like, it's altitude.
Draw your own conclusion.
Hotter than Sandra Locke. Hotter than Sandra Locke.
Yep.
All day long.
Then again, the gorilla in Any Which Way You Can was probably... Or the orangutan.
No. Come on.
Hotter than Sandra Locke.
Sandra Locke was a straight up five. She was... You couldn't say anything bad about her. You just couldn't say anything good about her. She was just like so middling.
Would you rather have a conversation with the orangutan or Sandra Locke?
What I would rather do is...
Me? Orangutan. Right? We talked about the gorilla story earlier, right?
What I'd rather do is speak to the women's in the audience. And let me tell you something. The women's in the audience, there's two things in the world. A man is instantly hotter if he's a doctor or a lawyer. A woman's instantly hotter if she's a flight attendant. Sorry. End of story. I'm out. Done.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's
done.
Fair.
Done.
That's fair. Again, it's the altitude. So he enters this relationship with Jocelyn Reeves, which ends up with two more kids. So he's now up to six children. One of them is currently an actor named Scott Eastwood. You may have seen him in a film or two. At this point, he was slated to star in what would become Die Hard. Eastwood owned the rights to the novel, Nothing Lasts Forever, upon which the movie is based. He released the rights so he could make Deadpool instead. oops. Maybe the first oops, other than the dating stuff.
Bad move. That was a bad move.
Yeah, that was a bad move. In 1997, he had another tough flight experience. While traveling from London to L.A. with Sondra and Harrison Ford, their plane had to make an emergency landing in Bangor, Maine, due to some equipment failure. Everything got fixed, and they finished their flight. I did not look up to see if Harrison was flying the plane, but I suspect he was.
Well, it didn't involve a raft, so it was okay.
He's one of those, you know, like a Travolta or whatever it was, his plane license, flying license. I don't know.
Pilot license.
Thank you.
Certification.
Coming from a guy who's actually flown a plane. Anyway.
You've flown a kite.
No, I flew a real plane once, too.
Yeah, okay. Holding the stick does not mean flying it.
I was way younger.
That's like Dad letting you sit on his lap while you drive the car.
It was similar to that, yes.
Come on.
Anyway, his directing became more refined, and his vision was making its way into the hearts of viewers. His first real win was the 1988 biographical movie Bird, which told the story of Charlie Parker, who Eastwood saw live in 1946 and was always mesmerized by. Although this movie was loved by critics and fans, as well as touching on the jazz Eastwood had become known to love, it was 1992's Unforgiven that earned him his first Academy Award. Like, he didn't win for Bird, which I really think he should have at least been nominated, because Bird's fucking amazing. I also have a Charlie Parker fascination. But anyhow, it was with Unforgiven that he earned his first Academy Award, with his mother in the audience, where he took Best Director and Best Picture Awards, which, like, the hoity-toityest of the hoity-toity.
Those are the two.
So does he take his wife, Sondra Locke, or the flight attendant to the Academy Awards with him?
I think he probably took a loved one, too, but he took his ma.
Oh, yeah. Because that's the only safe move he's got at this point, because he can't possibly fuck her.
So the movie is dedicated to Sergio Leone and Don Siegel, directors he had worked with and admired greatly for their panoramic view behind the camera. If you look at Eastwood's work, it is very panoramically filled. It's lots of wide lenses. There's, you know, it's big. It's very big.
Well, I think that I think the thing that's interesting here is, first of all, with Unforgiven, you have the sort of anomalous result that a Western wins Best Picture. Mm-hmm. That's unusual.
That's pretty unique, yeah.
The Academy Awards, for Best Picture, the Academy Awards will only give Best Picture to some Western or something if they're, like, snubbing something else. You know, like, when they give it to a comedy, which is slightly rarer than a Western, and they'll give it to a comedy like Annie Hall over Star Wars, even though wrong. Star Wars was a much more significant picture, but for a Western to get
only overtime
for the anyway. Western to get Best Picture is a huge thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Like, he earned it.
I can't think
That movie's incredible, yeah. And this is where Kurt Russell could have come in.
I mean,
Russell,
I
and the people he cast, like that.
But
I'll be your Huckleberry. I could be wrong, but
any biography. Oh, shit, I can't think of a biography, which Bird was. You know, maybe I'm just having blind spot, but I can't think of a biography that's won Best Picture.
I don't.
Especially biography of a jazz star. I can't think of one.
I'm having the same trouble. I mean, you got Google and I got a Rolodex, but I can't think of a single biography that's won Best Picture.
Yeah, but at this point with Unforgiven was clearly a huge picture, and he's doing something that's very interesting in it, where he's like bringing back the John Ford style of, as you mentioned, the Ansel Adams.
Gigantic, panoramic.
The Ansel Adams.
Make you feel very small and insignificant.
Yeah.
Like, draw you into the world through that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's using...
Which he picked up from Leone and Siegel while working with him.
No, it's more John Ford.
It is definitely John Ford, but he didn't work with John Ford in the same respects. Like,
I'm pretty sure he's seen John Ford films.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
And like the way
sure he's watched
the way it's photographed, it's quite clear that the cinematographer was picked with a John Ford eye towards things, and I think that stood him in good stead with that movie, where it was just it, and plus everybody loves this idea of rekindling, like, you know, huge advances in cinematography, like John Ford did. And that kind of thing, where America set the stage for the big spectacle movie.
Baraka, that was filmed in 70mm.
The King's Speech, like, won the Oscars.
Yeah, making things even more... What?
Beautiful Mind won the Oscars. Braveheart, I guess.
Beautiful Mind won the Best Picture? Okay, so there's a biopic.
The Last Emperor.
Yeah, which nobody really knows why, but...
I love that
Amadeus.
Movie. Oh, that makes sense.
That was a terrible movie.
That was a Patton. Brilliant movie. That makes sense. Okay, so we
Lawrence of Arabia. That's not. That's more.
That's not as biopic. That's storytelling, I think. But either way,
no. I think that's like
John.
A biopic.
John has done his due diligence and found out that there were some biopics
There were some, but
it's very, 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 very unusual.
Yeah, it's thank you, Mr. Modified.
So, while filming the movie, Eastwood wore the same pair of boots he wore on Rawhide. Those boots are now in a museum.
So, probably a strip mall museum.
No, it seemed a little bit better than that.
Yeah, it's a strip mall museum. Keep going.
I didn't memorize what it was. But this is repeating that Serape thing, though. Like, the same boots from Rawhide in Unforgiven.
That's sriracha sauce.
Not to mention, I'd be happy if my fit in the boots that I wore 30 years ago.
I literally have boots that are 30 years old.
So a quick funny about 1988. Stacey McLaughlin sued Eastwood for $100,000 after he rammed her car while she was parked in his spot at his production studio's office. She would claim he maliciously did it. He would claim he was merely trying to park in his own spot. He would pay $960 to fix her car, but the judge would not hold him to any further penalties. She was dropping off an audition tape.
If Mr. Eastwood rammed my car, no, there wouldn't be an audition tape going on. No.
You don't. All right. You don't park in the owner of the company's spot when dropping off a fucking audition tape. Second of all,
you don't sue Clint Eastwood.
Okay. Well, yes, his exes do.
Successful
for undisclosed amounts. But like, if you're Clint Eastwood, what kind of mind does it take to go, that's my fucking spot, I'm just making that car shorter, and start crashing into it? And how do you get away with that fucking stuff in court?
Why don't you ask Michael Jackson that?
$100,000.
We got away with a lot of shit.
No, what? $100,000? I thought you said it was $950.
No, he paid $960. She sued for $100,000.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he lined up the bumper and just pushed her out of the spot.
Yeah, like he took his truck and crashed her little Honda or whatever.
No, he just came up slow and then pushed.
Maybe. Either way. The newspaper article said rammed. That's the word they used. Yeah, right. I don't know.
$950 means you knock the tag sticker off the license plate. That's
in California, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Come on. $950, are you kidding me?
So the Eastwood we knew throughout the 90s was a talented director who would often star in his own movies. Gone were the cowboy days, for the most part, and the old tough cops, and the comedy, as he was almost solely working in dramatic roles in films. No more awards for him for a number of years, but his movies were very well received and critically acclaimed. Like, people loved him. And the critics, too. And the 90s were not without more Eastwood relationship antics, however. He was officially ending his relationship with Locke, finally, and carrying on a relationship with Reeves, the stewardess, or airline attendant. Eastwood took to spending romantic time with Frances Fisher, whom he met on the set of Pink Cadillac in 1988. By the early 90s, he had a daughter with Fisher as well. This would be the first of his now, or first of his now seven kids that he actually was there for the birth. Six kids, he was not there for the birth of a single one of them. This is the first one.
Yeah, we all want that kind of money.
Yeah, well, he remember, he was born in 1930, and this is like 1992. So he's 40-something, and he finally showed up to see a birth.
Yeah, 1930, 1992, he's probably about 40.
So this relationship ended... Don't fuck with my math. Damn it. This relationship ended because she was using his credit cards without permission, even though she eventually paid them back.
And now he's a rapper.
It's a little Kanye.
He's a rapper at this point, yeah. It's appropriate. I think we're doing this on the actual day that... That Kanye and one of those ass people, they're actually...
The Cardassians?
They're actually divorced or something. I don't know. I don't know who these people
but
are.
But he bought a house across the street from her.
I don't know who...
It's the creepiest shit ever.
I would do that.
If you had Kanye money, yes, you might.
Yes, I would do that all day long. I would do that all day long.
I would not.
You would buy every house around them.
If yeah, I had I would, Kanye yeah. money, I'd move one of my, either me, myself, or my ex to fucking Morocco or some shit.
Yeah, let me put a warning to you. Like any chicks out there who are like, you know, getting some endorphins from my voice. If you marry me and I make hundreds of millions of dollars, I will buy every house around you and blast the Superfly soundtrack all day long. Around
that will move dogs in.
Yeah. Not that any of us were getting...
And dog trainers.
Not that any of us were getting dates. But I think this makes sure that none of us are getting dates. Thanks, Herbert. So by the mid-90s, Eastwood had...
This whole podcast is dateless.
Yes, it is. By the mid-90s, if you're on a date and you tell somebody about this podcast...
That's
you don't
a
get a
date.
Second date.
No, that's a bad
date. I do not bring this shit up in a first date. Are you kidding me?
You don't have first dates.
Unless you've
I
got...
only have first dates.
You haven't had any in a while.
Unless you've got millions of dollars and you're dating Sandra Locke, you know, then she'll hang around.
So by the mid-90s, Eastwood had yet another relationship turned to marriage. Only his second wife, but obviously part of a long string of overlapping relationships in Eastwood's life.
Man, this guy is a rapper. Why doesn't he have any chains?
Her name was Dinah Marie Ruiz.
Oh, man. She's, are you kidding me?
No.
He marries the name. He marries the name.
And stature. Again, they're all back pockets.
Dinah
Marie Ruiz.
Is she a flight attendant? I mean, that's like the that's like the sexiest name ever.
Funny you should ask. She was a former news anchor and host of Candid Camera for a while. She met Eastwood in an interview and married him 4 years later in 1996. She's 35 years younger than him. They also had another daughter.
Score! Jesus Christ. Moving on up
to the east side.
Fuck. Jesus. This guy's got some play.
Dude, he met her in an interview, a filmed interview.
I know.
That's some fucking game right there.
I'll be standing up. Meet me in the green room.
Right?
It's the guy who makes Eazy-E look like a fucking stockbroker.
My God. So anyhow, they have another daughter together, which is eight for Eastwood now, officially. Now, I have to say officially, because nobody actually knows, and there's a lot of shit out there, and I didn't throw any of that in.
All right, so at some point, like, are you going to get to, like, the key thing here? Like, at some point, does it happen?
What happened?
Where he converts to Mormonism?
No, I didn't get to that.
It seems like he should be a Mormon at this point. Like, this is a lot of...
He just likes love with no glove, yo.
Yeah, I know. There's no putting on the galoshes here. I mean, this is like crazy. Jeez, I had no idea. Oh, my God.
So, the daughter is named Morgan, who has appeared in the reality TV show Mrs. Eastwood and Company, which I haven't watched, but apparently there was a TV show. She would appear in a few of his movies, but they would divorce 18 years later in 2014. So
it's weird how long these things go on.
I know.
18 years later.
Much like the first marriage where they were together forever, but they weren't together.
I think there's some overlap going on here.
There's a lot of overlap. I used that word. Yeah.
How is he married? He's not old enough to be married to these people sequentially as long as he's been.
He's only had the two marriages.
Yeah, and that last.
And they started when he was 20 some years old.
He's with these chicks for a very long time.
No. He's avoiding alimony payments for a very long time with these two wives.
That's what it is.
And he's got all these other fill-in.
Why didn't he just go to dental school? It's a year and a half.
Well, dentist.
I'm telling you, dental school, that's the way to go.
So in 1997, Eastwood would release his own beer, Pale Rider Ale. The ad's catchphrase was, "You didn't expect Clint Eastwood to make a salad dressing, did you?" Profits were given to charity, much like Paul Newman's label that he had parodied.
Yeah, well.
I was not able to find any for sale on the internet, unfortunately. Aging beyond handsome leading man, as he entered the 2000s, Eastwood would play on his change by directing and starring in Space Cowboys, a film that addressed the aging process and also starred other actors from his age, including James Garner, who he had made fun of when he was a bit actor.
Mr. Bruce Willis.
Yeah. He followed that up with Mystic River in 2003. Which earned Sean Penn and Timothy Robbins Academy Awards for their roles, as well as helping secure Eastwood's Lifetime Achievement Award from the Screen Actors Guild the same year. So 2003.
Wow.
SAG Award is maybe people patting each other on the back, but it's still kind of an honorific.
But like a Lifetime Achievement Award from SAG is like the equivalent of one Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
It's all jerk off material. Mm-hmm. It's all like, you know.
Yeah, that just says that you've been there and everybody's taken a turn jerking you off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no. But at the point that Eastwood wins this SAG Award, it's significant because it's quite clear that he's like not a commie lib.
Right.
Which is, like, interesting to me that, like, he can actually get there, you know.
I purposely made this non-political. In 2004, he again won Best Picture and Best Director for Million Dollar Baby. Again, with his mother in the audience. And only the second time she had attended the awards. He had been there a ton of times.
Like, fuck this. I'm bringing mom with me every time.
Two times, yeah. And it's like, it's written that she may be a luck charm because the two times he won Best Director and Best Picture, mom was there.
Yeah, because they don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, where was I?
Keep going.
That movie also produced Academy Awards for both big stars, Hilary Swank and Morgan Freeman. It was not clear that he had become the if it was not clear that he had become the top of Hollywood by now, it was cemented right then. Eastwood would be able to make whatever he wanted from here on out. He is the oldest person to have won the Academy Award for Best Director to this day. Still very active in front of and behind the camera, it was his starring role and directing that made 2008's Gran Torino into the huge success it was. Touching on some issues that he would be noted for in the news, like classism and racism, the movie was a compelling look at an aging man and how his outlook would or could still be altered. The world fucking loved it.
That was big in there because, you know, it was one of the most, in the beginning of that film, I mean, he was very, very vocal in his racism.
Yep.
And by the end of it, it's like, hey, you know what? He
gave the car to the Hmong guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His
damn zipper head.
And the kids are sitting there.
That's the beginning.
Yeah. And the grandkids are sitting there. It's like, oh, I'm going to get the car. And then, boom. Like, wait, what?
Yep.
No.
And I probably watched that movie 20 times, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
I really, really like that movie. Mm-hmm. It is a phenomenal piece of cinematic work.
I think it's... Yeah, I think it's his best movie.
It might be. Mm-hmm. Like, Tombstone...
That Unforgiven.
Pretty fucking... Or, sorry. Keep doing that. No. God damn it. Yes, Unforgiven is pretty fucking good.
Yeah, if you wanted to watch those two movies...
I tried to watch Million Dollar Baby. It was another one I would have had to pay for. It wasn't available for free on those services.
It's a movie. It's
a boxing movie.
A good movie. And Hilary Swank turns me on.
It's not a bad movie at all.
Let's have a boxing movie with a female boxer. It's so PC.
Well, it's what it is. It's not a bad...
It's a big move.
It's not a bad film, but Unforgiven and Gran Torino are far better.
Gran Torino is like is the bigger social construct because it's about like you know taking somebody who like it's about portraying a racist character as sympathetic.
Well, and that's a bigger move than how an old dog can learn new tricks.
Yeah.
Where he's you know racist, but because of his interaction with that young boy, he learns. A whole different way to look at the world. Now, it doesn't necessarily change his behaviors much, but you know, it is a huge turnaround in the character that he portrays.
It plays it a little bit safe because it's Asian gangs, so that's my only quibble with the movie. Where we get PC and we can't have black gangs, fine, okay, but.
I'd argue there's more Asian hate crimes going on now than there are black hate crimes, but then again, I'm trying to make this not political.
There's
so
nothing that would bear that out where Asians are beating up black guys. There's nothing. There's literally nothing.
No, I think you misheard what I said, which is totally fine. Let's move forward.
Yeah, no.
In 2014... It's totally,
like, not a thing. You're just, like, pulling on some weird shit.
In 2014, as his relationship with Dinah Eastwood, Nee Ruiz... was ending, he struck up a relationship with Christina Sondera, who was working at Eastwood's Mission Ranch Hotel.
Can he pick these names? Can he pick these names?
Jesus.
They are just these fucking hot names.
It is a good string. But they're all back pockets, you know? So...
You're latched onto that. You can't let that go, can you?
It's a good theme. I'm going to carry it through. So anyhow, she was working Eastwood's Mission Ranch Hotel on his Carmel, California properties. Oh, John has pictures.
No.
Let's see.
No. She was working there, so he stepped her. Let's go back to the hog's breath.
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
He opens up businesses so he has an instant and ready supply of back pockets.
So yeah, he latches onto this fucking wait staff person. And they're still together today, despite their over 30-year difference. So, again, he's dating somebody way younger.
All she has to do is wait for him to die at Bing Payday.
Uh-huh. She often accompanies him on red carpet events and reportedly gets along with his big old gang of kids.
Yeah, which are older than she is.
Yes.
Yes.
But the couple has publicly stated that they have no intention of getting married, which means maybe he found one that figured out that he's not gonna. Also, he's like, I mean, right now I think he's 90-ish, right? Today, Eastwood is also part owner of the famous Pebble Beach Golf Club near Monterey Peninsula, California, where he had been stationed for all those years ago while in the Army. He is also an accomplished jazz pianist and has contributed songs to a number of his own movies. Rupert will also be happy to know that he does not have a star on the Walk of Fame.
Excellent!
But does have his hand and footprints at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
I don't know what you do to get that.
I don't either.
Because Hollywood Walk of Fame... I think it's 50.
But Grauman's is out of land space, right?
Right, but Hollywood Walk of Fame, there's something where it's like you just pay $50,000 and you get it.
Right.
There's something, it's a cash payment and you get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how Grauman's works. I don't really understand this Chinese theater thing, although the idea of getting spare ribs and sweet and sour pork in a movie sounds very good to me.
pork lo mein pizza, motherfucker.
Yeah. I don't know how the Grauman's thing works, like if it's invitation only, or if it's a $50,000. I don't know how it works.
I don't know. I mean, like, if you've been there, right?
Yeah.
Like, Roy Rogers and Trigger's spot is about the size of this table. There's only so much land space there.
Right, exactly. Whereas Hollywood Walk of Fame is
it's just that as long as the fucking boardwalk goes, you can do it.
Okay, so for the reindeer people in our population, the Hollywood Walk of Fame is basically a dirgy little walk around a slum where they can extend it forever. They just keep wrapping it around on these sidewalks where the homeless and the vagrants and the less fortunate
take selfies of themselves camping next to Sandra Bullock's star or whatever.
I mean, basically, if you want to star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame then and now, you have to displace a bomb to do it. Whereas Grauman's Chinese Theater, I think they might have armed guards, and it's a very textured walking surface. So it's a different situation there. The thing I like about the Grauman's handprints in the cement is this is the closest any of these people have gotten to sticking their hands in cement, which I think is a good
thing. Well, like I said, and there's Roy Rogers and Trigger, and I think his gun is there, too, if I remember correctly.
Well, I'm talking about people who actually made money sticking their hands in cement, and I think it's a good thing.
It's as close to spackling a wall as they will ever get? Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly. Okay. It's the closest they will ever get to actual real work.
Well, I don't know. Fucking Clint dug pools. Saying. So, anyway.
He ain't digging much pools. He's got like...
No, he's not digging pools anymore.
If you got the King family kids and a bunch of wives named Wyatt.
You got eight legitimate children, most of whom are daughters.
I mean, you've got all these chicks with like space names. I mean, I don't know what the hell the...
So, no actor has directed more films than Eastwood, save Woody Allen. It's arguable that Woody Allen's a director more than an actor. So,
at this point,
like,
although all of his
that's a tough scale to weigh.
Different thing because Woody Allen's I directed this films are his lesser films. Whereas Eastwood's I directed these films are his greatest films. Sort of, you know.
But nobody other than Woody Allen has directed as an actor, has directed more films.
On the Woodman.
It is perhaps the thing he will be remembered for by younger people who have not seen Dirty Harry or a bunch of his westerns. Like, my kid will probably remember him more as a director than the actor that we know him as. He has garnered more accolades from directing than he has for acting, and it seems as if it is something he's compelled to do even in his older years. Because, again, the guy is, like, 90 years old now.
Well, I mean, shit. It's, like, not only just his, but, I mean, you've got, like, well, never mind.
He's one of the top...
Invictus, hereafter.
He's one of the top flight directors.
Yeah.
He's in the class of James Cameron.
He's there with Coppola and in my world.
Yeah, the Italian guy, like Coppola. Yeah. He's like in there with
both,
like,
Coppolas, by the way.
Sofia Coppola is not any great director.
Sofia does a fucking great job.
Yeah, she's pretty good, and she's a fat chick I'd like to fuck. But, like, you know, I mean, in terms of great directors, Sofia Coppola is not there. Francis is. He has a more feminine name. That's true. But, in terms of great... Clint Eastwood's in the top shelf of directors. Yep. There's no denying that.
If I see a movie as directed by Eastwood, I will probably go see it. I see that Eastwood is a star in the movie, that does not give me the same...
Not as much as director, yeah.
Yeah.
Better
director. If I see that he's directing it, I am more compelled.
Yeah, acting and directing? Absolutely. You're still... I'm going to expect something different here.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
So... I was not aware of all of this philandering, and it made for a great story. Although I can't necessarily discredit him for it, because it seems like he did most of it kind of above board. Like, everybody kind of knew, and so what the fuck ever. More to his career. Coming from a bit actor whose only real performance before that was being in a play that he hated the experience of, and moving into what he has become in international cinema now is a move that I don't think I've ever covered somebody that has done that in all of our stories. and I have a hard time thinking about other people who have. It is admirable, to say the very least, and to do it with the quality that he has, even his comedic quality, or from his comedic quality to his dramatic qualities, it's, he just somehow knows what movies should be, no matter what side of the camera he's on. And I enjoy him. I will return to say, though, that I am more compelled to see a movie if I see that he's directed it than if he's just in it.
Oh, I love the guy. I was just the other day I watched Outlaw Josie Wales. Yeah. And some of the older stuff that he's done is just, I mean, it's palatable still. You know, a lot of times, you know, some of those movies that are, you know, 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you start getting to the point where it's like, I don't know why I was in love with this. Because I can't watch it. It irritates me.
Police Academy.
Exactly. And then you sit there, but these ones you can go through, you can watch, you can enjoy. And for him to be able to take cowboys to cops to, I mean, he still plays macho people throughout them, but he manages to come into different, make the characters his own. And when he directs them, he ends up putting more of a human feel into the bad, you know, the Gran Torino. You know, he puts more of a feel to it and humanizes these people and shows that there is still a message in there somewhere where people can, they can change, they can do things, you know. So, I love it. I love him.
So, I love Clint Eastwood because he's one of only two people I can think of who's broken through the black like me barrier. Where he's like the one of only two people who were overtly, not really wildly left wing in Hollywood, where it got to the point where their body of work was such that you couldn't deny it anymore. The other one being Mel Gibson. You got some assholedom in their past, or you got some assholedom in their present. Like, I believe that, like, these guys have real problems, nothing more than anybody else who's a famous director in Hollywood. But the cool thing is that these guys, and there's only two I can think of, Gibson and Eastwood, where they broke through and they got some recognition, even though they were politically divergent from the Hollywood haute couture. That was extant at the time. And you can't deny it. Like, great directors, fantastic, and they were authentic. And that is, like, really valuable to me, that they lived their authentic lives and persevered through it.
This sounds like something your friends do.
Well, I thought we were friends.
I'm extremely uncomfortable with that.
I know. But you know...